and welcome to the seventh episode of the Novel Traveller podcast. My name is Michelle Walsh Jackson, and I'm the Novel Traveller. Well, I've some tasty treats on this week's podcast as my travels tantalise the taste buds, and I take a trip down the pier of my own hometown of Howth, and I speak with Sean Doran of Doran Seafood. We get to chat about the fishing industry and how you can enjoy a taste of the sea from your own home. But first, to tickle your taste buds even more, my guest this week is award-winning chef and proprietor of Dunbrody House Hotel, Kevin Dundon. I've been lucky enough to be down his part of the world in beautiful South County Wexford, and it's situated just beside the Hook Peninsula, which is of course home to the world's oldest working lighthouse. So sit back and enjoy some very novel travel. This week I'm delighted to have award-winning, highly acclaimed chef with me, Kevin Dundon from Dunbrody House in lovely County Wexford. Hello Kevin, thanks for joining me today.
Absolute pleasure. It's good to hear your voice.
And Kevin, you know, I've been down in your beautiful property, and you know, there are a couple of things that really stand out for me. Your little pub that you created, and your farmer's market. They're two absolute gems and a real addition and a delight to the area, I have to say.
Yeah, I think what's great about it is that what actually happened was that our local pub closed, unfortunately. And so we decided that we'd open our own pub on the grounds of Dunbrody, and we called it The Local. And basically it was old outhouses, and we kind of just refurbished them really casual, and everything is cooked on fire in the restaurant. So it's a wood-burning pizza oven. We do fish and chips, obviously. Great outdoor spaces. And then on a Sunday we do jazz music, and we have the outdoor farmer's market, so which is all local artisan producers and artists and crafts, which is, it just kind of brings, I tell you what it's done, is it's actually brought the locals into the grounds of Dunbrody House that they might not come into before. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of opened up Dunbrody to a bigger market. And it's real family driven, family oriented. Obviously at nighttime you have live music and stuff like that, so it's a bit of crack, missing big time.
I know we all are, but Kevin, I have faith that this thing's going to just disappear in the summer. It's going to fade away like it did last year. I have this hope and
faith, distant memory
of history repeating itself, that it will kind of die down like it did last year. So I'm holding to that thought, you know.
Good. Well, I'm with you.
Yeah, okay, excellent. Now, can I go start with a quick fire round just to get an idea of your likes and dislikes, if you don't mind? So, you can elaborate or you can just pick one. So if I were to say Chinese or Indian, which would you go for?
Oh, Indian for sure. And I'll tell you why, because Indian food travels much better, and it's better the next day. And when you get a good Indian meal, you'll be able to eat or taste every single spice in that dish. And I just think that Chinese is good. To me, it's too sweet, a lot of it. And I like Peking duck, but it doesn't travel. So the vegetables get soggy and stuff like that, where an Indian is just spectacular. And I've traveled all over India, and I just love India. And I love the people of India.
Oh, I'll be back to talk about that. So if I were to say travel by boat or train, which would you go?
Both. I love trains, but I love going on the Shannon on the cruises around Ireland on the boats. But if I was pushed to the collar, it would be definitely trains.
Oh yeah, there is something romantic about them. Vineyard or distillery?
Vineyard, because I love the outdoors, and I think I just love walking through the vineyards and seeing the grapes and the whole process. And when you go to a good vineyard, it's really special.
Okay. Theatre or cinema?
Theatre, for sure.
Luxury or adventure?
Adventure.
E-book?
I like luxury too, though.
We all love the luxury, Kevin. Ain't that the truth? we can deny it and pretend, but we all love it. E-book or paperback?
Paperback for sure. I love the smell of a book. And
I know what you mean. Beach or mountain?
Beach.
Dessert or main course?
Main course.
Bike or Camino?
Bike.
Caravan or tent?
Tent.
And, you know, you nearly answered this one for me earlier when I said jazz or rock.
Jazz. I love yeah. jazz.
When you mentioned what you have in the pub, I thought, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I can just picture you cooking away your jazz going in the background, I have to
yeah,
say.
Definitely.
So look, going back to your first travel memories, Kevin, like, where did you go on your first big journey that you really remember vividly?
Well, we used to go to Kilkee in County Clare every summer. So we had a house down there and we used to go down, Mum and Sharon and myself used to go down, and Dad used to come down at the weekends. And I've got very fond memories growing up in Kilkee during the summer. But my first foreign holiday was South Africa when I was 12. I think I was 12, 10, or 10 to 12. And Mum grew up in Zimbabwe or Rhodesia. So my uncle lives in South Africa. So I remember that was a huge trip. And I remember going through Amsterdam because we flew Dublin, Amsterdam, and then Amsterdam to Johannesburg probably. And but we stopped in Amsterdam and a friend of Dad's was the head of a restaurant association there. They brought us out to this really smart restaurant. And I remember I ordered steak Diane, which was flambéed at the table.
Oh my God. Incredible exotic tastes even then. How old were you?
Totally. I think I was just looking at the steak. But anyways, they were cooked it at my table. I remember them flambéing it with brandy. And I remember Dad saying, take it easy on the brandy. He's only 10 or whatever it was. But yeah, no, that was, listen, I could talk about that particular holiday all day long. It's just some of the scenery that we saw in South Africa. It was just, it's such a beautiful country. Beautiful country.
I completely agree with you there. Absolutely love South Africa.
I remember, I'll just give you one snippet because I think it was really good, particularly for my age at the time. My uncle had this kind of holiday home and it was in the middle of the bush is what they called it over there, like the middle of the woods. And the local tribe used to mind his house for him. And we pulled up at his house in complete pitch black. And we drove up this really long kind of road, boring type thing up to the house. And Jeremy, my uncle, and myself walked up to the tribe's homestead. And they were all sitting around in a circle with a big fire inside. It's like, it sounds like a story for a 10-year-old. And yeah. the chief was sitting up on a big high stool. And we had to get the key of the house off him. And it was amazing. And then we went down and opened the house and we stayed there. And the next day when we woke up, I just remember the view, what the vista was unbelievable. And there was pomegranate trees. I remember them in front of the house. And it's like, you just picked them off and ate them. It was just like unbelievable. But that was a great childhood memory.
Oh my goodness. And how exotic, like the pomegranate. Did you always love food or did anything particularly draw you to food more so? I mean, that sounded like an incredible experience to have pomegranates back then.
Yeah, well, Mum lived, grew up in Rhodesia, that she would have been cooking food different to what the Irish mammy would have been cooking here in Ireland. So we were eating... it's not exotic today, but back then it was very exotic, like of the dishes that we'd be eating. And like we were eating peri peri chicken, babuti, you know, all sorts of wonderful stuff. And Mum and my grandparents, or my granddad in particular, was a real foodie. And we'd be eating dinner and we'd be talking about what we were going to have the next day. It was just kind of, I was surrounded by foodies. So that's, I guess that's probably where I
natural
got my
progression.
My passion. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Kevin, I asked you to pick a memento from your travels and you've got something there in your hands that you're waving about. Will you tell the listeners what's your favorite travel memento?
This, what it's in my hand, is a beautiful rolling pin made out of glass. And there's a hole in the top that you can actually put cold water in and put a cork in it. So it keeps your pastry cold. Now, this was, I was traveling in the UK and my grandmother gave me this as a present. It's a family heirloom, but it was a gift for me when I was traveling over in the UK. And my gran knew I loved baking and I just think it's beautiful. I use it.
It,
I
it's a
use it.
glass rolling pin, and it's got a beautiful blue and white wave
It looks like
pattern through it.
Venetian glass, actually,
It looks
doesn't
like the
it? It
Mirafiori glass, yeah, from
mirror
Venice.
for
Yeah.
glass from Venice, yeah. So
Yeah.
it is
Oh.
it's spectacular. So
Oh,
yeah, so
and
that's
you
my
use
memento.
it and you still use it?
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All the time. Oh, that's a
Yeah.
lovely travel memory to
Well,
have then.
it's a travel memory and a memory of my grand as well. So it's a double whammy for me. So
And it matches your lovely ducca blue kitchen.
it does,
It kind of does,
yeah.
doesn't it?
It
And your
does, yeah.
kettle over there,
Yeah.
very color coordinating.
Yeah, there you go.
What's the funniest thing that ever happened to you on holiday, Kevin?
The funniest thing that ever happened to me on holiday. Oh yeah, last year actually, because it was a question, like when someone asks you that question, there's like lots of funny things happen to you on holiday, but you don't actually really remember them happening. But
Sure.
last year I was actually on the Shannon and I was doing my 2 o'clock live video on the top of one of the boats, and this guy called David, and there was a gang, there was a 12 of them, and they just finished college and they were on a week's holiday on the Shannon. And I had just done this 7-part snippets of how to make sourdough. And I told them all to name their sourdough. And David shouted over to me and said, "I'm making your sourdough and it's brilliant." And I said, "What did you name it?" And he said, "April." Or what did he say? June. No, he said June. And I said, "Why June?" He said, "Because it was the month of June." But it was just funny that he
He
was
was
like
making
22 years of age, chap
it.
making the bread. I just thought it was funny.
Oh,
And the way they shouted over was great. It was really good.
that's kind of a lovely memory, isn't it? Isn't it lovely the
Yeah.
people you meet? And I went cruising for the first time last year on the Shannon myself, and I kind of wish I had done it years ago because it's so magical. And the way people, like that chat to each other, and they help each other with the boats to get, to moor, and
It's
it's just lovely.
such a fabulous holiday. We've done it. I did it twice last year, and I love it for a couple of reasons. A is because I can go get on the boat and we're just ourselves, so that you don't get anybody coming up looking, chatting, or so you kind of get a switch off, and I like a switch off time. It's great to cook on board, and there's great restaurants, and the Shannon's very well equipped for moorings, as you said, but there's loads of restaurants and bars along the way, so it's.
Absolutely. Like Lucre's and Shannon Bridge is great crack. Yeah, there's loads of
Yeah,
great ones.
exactly.
Yeah.
We have done it on the Charente in France as well, and it wasn't as good in the sense that it wasn't set up well enough that there was enough place to stop, like the Charente. So I
Yeah.
definitely recommend the Charente. It's a fantastic holiday.
It is. It's a new holiday. I think a lot of people kind of tried it like I did last year. I'd normally have been away, all summer
Yeah.
traveling somewhere. So it was wonderful to experience it, and I'd love to do it again.
Yeah.
But if you could be anywhere in the world right now, if we didn't have the restrictions and you could go anywhere, is there anywhere particularly that you'd like to see that you haven't?
Oh, see that I haven't seen
Oh,
before.
well, either or somewhere that you'd like to go back to or somewhere that you'd like to go to.
I would love to be going skiing this Friday, and I had it booked with my family. We go to St. Anton every year, and we stay in Hotel Anton, and we've been going there for the last, I don't, 20 years probably, and they keep our skis there in the hotel, and they take them out when we arrive back, and they've become really good friends of ours, to the extent that their son came over here and worked here for a summer, and Sophie was supposed to go there this winter to do to work there for a bit. But we love activity type of holidays as a family, so skiing is brilliant. But my favorite place in the world to go to, just cast for myself, is the Maldives, and it's like everybody loves the Maldives, but it's what I love about it is that it's you go onto an island, you arrive by plane, and then you either get a speedboat or a seaplane to your island, and once you get off onto the island, you take your shoes off and you put them back on as you leave, and it's just like complete and utter switch off time of just of nothing and just eating great food and relaxing. Scuba diving and stuff like that, so cool.
Absolutely. You've got a great mix in the Maldives, don't you, of different cultures?
Can you tell me a little bit about the food that you found in the market?
Yeah, well, they try to do, there's a lot of Indian style food and then there's a lot of Japanese style food. I think they're just catering to the markets that's coming there. But the Maldivian food itself is kind of a lot of stew-based food, like a wet foods, which I really like. And I love Indian food. Anyways, I like that kind of spice. I like eating a lot of vegetables. And I think, I love meat, obviously, and fish. But like, if I'm eating vegetables, I love it when it's in a curry, because I just think it's so much more palatable and nourishing and filling and yum. And it's like someone's come up to you and just kind of hugged you with their with their bowl of food. It's just lovely. A lot of fish as well over there.
And that probably leads me back to India. You know, when you were in India, you said you've traveled extensively. What did you find, or what did you really like about India?
I loved the people, and what I loved about them was it's very humbling to me, because I was down in Kerala, so down south, and I was in small fishing villages, and I was kind of looking at these families and how wonderful they are. They've got this beautiful white smile and really happy people, but their life is quite simple. So the husband would go out and fish during the night. They'd fish at nighttime there, and then they would come in the morning and give the fish to their wives, and they would dry them or fillet them, and they would sell them at a market. And the kids would get up and go to school, come back and play soccer or whatever. The football was their main sport that they played over there, and cricket. And but their housing, what they lived in, was fairly basic. But you know, when you analyze it, like, we create monsters. We all create our own monsters, and the more monsters that you create, the more you have to feed it. When you actually strip it back, they actually have the perfect world.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
the kids are going to school. They're eating great, healthy food. They're living in this great climate, and they're just happy. Now, they do look at the Western world and they kind of wish they had a bit of that, but overall, they're just like super people.
Absolutely.
The color and the vibrance of the place. Like, when you go to the market there, you just get this like waft of brilliant spices, and you see all these like dyes of clothing and sarongs, and it's just, I just think color gives life and brightness and warmth, and, you know, because like, when I'm sitting here now at the moment, it's a bit cloudy out there.
It is.
Snow here this morning. But I just love vibrance. I'd recommend anybody go to India. So it's really, really good. Yeah, really, really nice.
And did you take many photos when you were there? Do you like taking photos?
Yeah, I like taking photos. I'm taking more photographs now than I ever did. So I went there once, and I went to an Ayurveda retreat. So I did yoga and I ate vegetarian for 2 weeks, and that was kind of an interesting experience, really cool experience, but interesting. So I went out to the markets, and I went on boats and stuff like that, and I took pictures there. Probably the most, in terms of food experience, that I've traveled to, it's two. One was to Thailand, and I went on the floating markets in Thailand, and that was amazing. But when we were going down to the floating island, we stopped off at this coconut plantation, and it was amazing what they got out of a coconut. So it started where you had the coconut trees, and they cut one of the branches and bent it over, and then they had this kind of 4-liter drum that they sat under the branch, and it caught all the sap, and then they brought that over, and then this fire going in this, it looked like a mummy's coffin, right? So if that was, and so they lit the fire underneath, and the top, they had these kind of flat paella pans, and they'd be reducing that sugar down, and they'd make a coconut sugar out of it. It was turned into like a fudge, and then they put it into small containers, and they broke it up into sugar. And then they took the, you know, obviously they took the coconut meat out of it. And then they used the shells where they used them for, some of the shells, they crushed them down and used them for fertilizing the ground. And then the others, they used quarters of it where they actually grew orchid flowers out of them. So it was like amazing what they got out of that.
Nothing goes to waste. I'm a big fan of Thailand myself. And wherever you eat the food, it's always good, isn't it?
Yes. With Thailand, I'm very mixed on Thai food. I love their appetizers and the starters. I think they're really, really good. I find their curries, although I like them, I find them very filling. So I'd eat like three or four mouthfuls and I'd get filled. And I think it's the coconut milk that does it for me, or the coconut cream. But that's just me. So.
Yeah. Well, Thai would be probably one of my favorites. And where else did you go? The floating markets are incredible. I've seen them. I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, it's a sight for eyes. When I asked, you know, do you take photos and do you have a selfie place? And immediately that came to my mind. Thailand is rich in color too, you know?
So I have my favorite selfie picture is actually in Victoria Falls. And that was brilliant. Amazing. I tell you why it was amazing. My grandfather was managing director of Thomas Cook Travel many, many years ago. And he took the maiden voyage on a seaplane. He took it from Southampton to Victoria Falls, and it was the inaugural one that was with British Airways. And basically they could only fly during daylight at a certain level, so it was all visual. So he kept a journal on this whole trip, and he started with Southampton, went to Sicily, and he talked about having currency coupons for each country, and he was a real foodie, so he talked about the markets, the hotels he stayed in, and he showed pictures of this airplane that he stayed in, and he was like doing a travel blog on it. And but he had like a full bed, he had a butler on the thing. This is how they traveled back.
Oh my goodness, the weight. Love a return to that.
Then he went to Cairo and then ended up in Victoria Falls, and there's a hotel in Victoria Falls called Victoria Falls Hotel. And inside the door in the lobby, there's this mural on the wall of the inaugural flight. And my grandfather's name's on that.
Oh, fantastic. How cool is that? That's incredibly amazing. Cool. And you must have taken a selfie at that. You did, as well.
But I already had a picture of it, because in his journal, he had a picture of that exact mural that was put up there that day. It was like amazing. And then my mum and her mum traveled on the Queen Mary to Cape Town at the same time. And then he went down and met them in Cape Town. And then they traveled up through Africa, through Sabu Sabu, so beside Kruger National Park, all the way up to Rhodesia. And they lived in Bulawayo. It's an amazing story. It's an amazing journey to read. And that's like a real travel blog, that one.
He didn't make it into a book, did he, by any chance, though?
No, I have it there. I nearly had it. Signed off with Discovery for a TV show that myself and my son were going to do.
Oh my goodness, that'd be amazing.
There was issues on insurance and stuff like that, so it didn't actually happen. But I'm still trying, because I just think it's such a cool story and a cool blog to document. Yeah.
Wow. I'm blown away with that. My head is full of all these romantic images of, you know, traveling with the old suitcases and Panama hats, and I can just see it all in my mind. But you mentioned Kilkee earlier. Now we're all refinding Ireland, and I think we will more so than ever this year with staycations. Do you have another spot in Ireland that you found maybe last year or recently, or that you would recommend?
Listen, there's so much, so many nooks and crannies in Ireland, and I've just seen so many beautiful places. A town that I love very much is Westport. I just love the whole feel when you drive into Westport. Again, it's got this kind of vibrance, fun, nice, really nice people. There's great walks. They have the Greenway. You know, they've got great music and bars. And I really like that. Castanber is another great place. I tell you where it's lovely is West Cork, Union Hall, all around there. I remember driving down there, I was filming a TV ad or something like that, and I drove down there and I was going, I feel as if I'm on like in Italy or something like that. And it's like on the roads, driving around, going over those bridges, looking at the coastal side. It's just like unbelievable. It's beautiful. Really, cool. Really nice.
When the sun shines, you really can be anywhere. I mean, that we do have it all when the sun shines. We just need to get
it. We do it. And fairness, I should really be talking about the Hook Peninsula because it is beautiful down here. But you know, when you live in a place, you don't actually see the beauty. Like when people come down here, they go, my goodness, the walks, the beaches, Tintern Abbey, the Hook by Crook. We've got great coastal walks. It's great food in the area and great accommodation and stuff like that.
I love that Hook by Crook story. Could you tell the listeners who haven't heard it before?
Yeah, so if you're in Dunbrody House, and Dunbrody House is an 1830 Georgian manor on 300 acres. We're on the Hook Peninsula. And we overlook Crook, and Crook is in Waterford. So you've got the three sisters, the Bar of the Nore and the Shore, and Cromwell was going to conquer Ireland by hook or by crook. So he was going to come up that estuary and conquer Ireland. He never did. But that's where the saying actually originates from.
Yeah, by hook or by crook. And it is, Crook is actually the oldest lighthouse, isn't it? Working lighthouse in the world.
Yes. I know it's a tourist thing, right? And it sounds, but I absolutely love it. It is so interesting to go into the Hook Lighthouse and to take the tour, and they talk about the light bulb, and then they talk about the history of the lighthouse, and you walk on a spiral staircase all the way up to the top, and you have this beautiful vista from the top of the lighthouse. It is truly memorable to do. I mean, that really is unbelievably good. It's one of those memories that I have a few of them, but it's one of those memories that I will take to my grave, that vista from the top of the Hook Lighthouse.
What other memories do you have that particularly stand out?
Well, I remember we went, Cash and myself went to Carrow, and we did this great tour of Carrow, and we were staying in this Mina Palace hotel, and we were at a conference, and we met the marketing director of that hotel. Now, we booked like just a normal room in the hotel, like it's a beautiful hotel, and when we arrived, they gave us the penthouse suite. The upgrades, and this was a suite of all suites. It was five rooms long, right? And you couldn't, like, if I was in one end of the room and or in one room, and Cash was in five rooms, you couldn't hear each other. It was that big. But what was amazing, there was a balcony off each of the rooms, and it was literally us, maybe like a small field, maybe I'm trying to think of Merrion Square. You know, the park in Merrion Square,
sure.
and the pyramids. So it was the balconies, our room, the balconies, this small green patch, and the pyramids. And we slept under the pyramids that night. Like, that was unbelievable.
What a memory.
That would cost you a fortune, but we got it for nothing. We were just blessed. But I think you find your own luck. I mean, that was just like really lucky, what a memory that's just like spectacular.
Oh wow!
A great trip I took in Ireland was remember I talked about I love adventure and I also love luxury as well, right? So what we did was myself and four mates, like really good mates, we bought secondhand kayaks. And we left Dublin and we kayaked the canals to Carrick on Shore. And basically what we did is we had a van beside us, and at nighttime we used to put our kayaks on top of the van and he'd drive us to a hotel. So we'd stay in the hotel, eat a nice restaurant and go back on the canals the next day. I tell you what was lovely about it was you kind of see Ireland inside out, if that makes sense, because you're in the middle of nowhere and you just have this so much peace and amazing thing. And it was in 2009 or 2010 through the major crash. And what was great about it was it really cleared your head, and we had great chats, like one-on-one, too. Like, we're mates for years. And so we talked about everything and what's going on in your life. And we kind of really kind of ironed out a lot of issues that were going on. It was really, really good for your headspace. It was a fantastic holiday. It was really, really good.
I think travel really changes you. It's not just a journey, but it's a journey into yourself, usually, when you go somewhere really, really nice, and, you know. And my next question was, what traveling companion would you ideally love to go on an adventure with? And you've kind of nearly answered that for me. Is there anybody dead or alive you'd love to go? Maybe your granddad.
Paul would be great. But my favorite person to travel with is my wife. Isn't that lovely?
That is really lovely.
It is so. It is so, because the two of us are so alike, and we met when we were 17, so we're really good friends, so as well as husband and wife. And we just love just like chilling and walking and experience different things, which is really good. Like Catherine, I think this is important too. Catherine's got a great friend. She loves friends, but she has a particularly great friend that they go on a walking trip every year. So they've done the whole of the Camino, and they just love that me time or their time to chat. And then I have my mates that I just talked about. Another trip that myself and my mates took, we went on the River Rogue, and we whitewater raft down the River Rogue in Oregon. And what was really cool about that particular holiday is that when you arrive at this cabin, they take your watch and your phone off you, and you go off grid for 6 days. And you're on these whitewater rafting, and then you pull in at nighttime, and you have to pitch your own tents. And they pitch the kitchen, and they set up the toilet and stuff like that. And basically, you go to sleep when it gets dark, and you wake up when it gets bright, and you actually go back in time, so near to primitive times, where you'd wake up kind of every half an hour just to protect yourself, because there was bears, there was like wildlife around the place. But it was unbelievably amazing trip, because like even the thought of not being stuck to your phone for 7 days, could you even imagine what that's like anymore?
No, not at the moment, certainly not. Yeah. We're all slaves to technology at the moment. I've been to Oregon, Kevin, and I found it an incredible state. It really, it's
beautiful.
That sense of space, but the mountains and the colours and Mount Hood. Were you near Mount Hood where you went, or were you more to the west?
We were there, and we
or Crater Lake. Were we near Crater Lake or
Crater Lake? But there was the waters. The River Rogue is quite a vigorous river, so it was quite. You'd want to be fairly fit to do it, but it was mad. Like when you were thrown out of boat as you would be, they tell you to put your feet first, because if you put your feet behind you could get stuck behind rocks and you'd be pushed down. Like, we only found out afterwards that a number of people would die on that river every year just because it's that vigorous. But it was but like when you fall in, you put your feet in front of you, so you're lying on your back and you're going down, and every time you tried to get a breath, another wave would hit over your face. It was quite scary, but I just put everybody off it there. It was amazing.
It's whitewater rafting is well worth doing. Yeah. It really, yeah.
The company we went with, they were so professional. They were called Oars.com, and they were unbelievably fantastic. I'll definitely do that again. Definitely do that one again. So are similar. So I'd like to do the Grand Canyon actually.
Have you done rafting? All right.
I've been to the Grand Canyon because I had a restaurant in Las Vegas, so that's not too far from Vegas. But it was that's really impressive. I mean, there's so many beautiful places around the world, but like we're Irish and we're kind of looking at from here, and the grass is always green on the other side of the field. But like, they live in America, or they live in India or South Africa, and they look at Ireland the way we look at their countries. So it's
very true.
That's what's beautiful about travel.
It is very true. Is there anywhere that you haven't been that you'd really love to go?
I would love to do the Galapagos Islands. Cat must have had that booked at one stage, and I think it was foot and mouth or something made us cancel it, and we just never got back to it. So it's one that's definitely we were going to go on a boat. They're small boats, cruise boats, like yachts that they've done up. And there was one called Princess Grace, I think it was, that had moved down there. And it was like, I think there was like 10 people on this boat. And you just kind of, yeah.
Yeah, they're quite limited. Celebrity, I think, have as well got a kind of a flotilla special boat to get onto Galapagos. Yeah. Now, and what's happening for you, Kevin, at the moment, like with your business? I mean, I know we're all restricted at the moment. Have you plans coming up or?
We've done a new lodge now. So the Gate Lodge is completed. It's beautiful. It's a 2-bedroom lodge with a full kitchen, sitting room. It's built in 1830, the same as Dunruddy House, which is super. We're putting on two glass terraces on the front of the hotel, so we're creating a beautiful outdoor dining space there, so with lovely heaters, so people be warm there. The terrace is very popular in Dunruddy anyways, but this is now just kind of giving a little more blankets and security for people. If the weather's not great, they still can be outdoors, so people will feel safer. Like last year, we did residents only in the hotel, so there was lots of space for guests. So we found that people that came, but it's at the start of when we reopened, they rebooked 2 or 3 times during the year because they felt really safe. And we'll do that again this year. I'd say it'd be just residents only this year as well. That's our plan at the moment. I've just signed a contract where we're coming out with our own new wine. So Kevin done the signature wine.
Very exciting. So,
So that's good. So we're in the process of blending grapes and wines at the moment. So we'll have a white and a red out this year, which is exciting. And which will be for sale in Ireland, but it'll be for sale worldwide, which is good. We're doing a lot of online stuff, as we all are at the moment. So our cooking school has gone pretty much online, and which is very popular. So, and we do courses on Instagram, private Instagram pages, and we're doing a lot of corporate Zoom stuff. We're just trying to think outside the box, because you know, places like Dunruddy, they do cost money to maintain. We're fine, so we're fortunate. I think we're fortunate because we're in business for the length of time that we're in. So we did have a bit built up that's maintaining, you know, keeping us going. I do feel sorry for new start businesses that will be struggling big time, particularly urban based restaurants and hotels. They're really got a tough last year. I think we're on the coast, so I think coastal hotels did really well, and they should do well. By all the signs, they should do well again this year. So
I think people will be really looking forward to having lots of short breaks. I mean, you know, when they couldn't go anywhere, even and midweek, hopefully, you know, before maybe some properties might have seen, you know, maybe have had empty Tuesdays or Wednesdays. I think it's going to be a good year. I'm optimistic, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh no, I'd agree. I agree with you. I think days of the week don't matter anymore, because we don't know whether exactly. I don't even know what day it is today. Actually, it could be Sunday for all I know.
I just get a ping to call you.
Yeah, it's like everything is just kind of a blur into one at the moment. You know, at this time of year, it's coming into March, and I just think that it's a lovely time of year for Ireland, because. And it gives great hope, because the garden is starting to come alive. Like, we've got camellias that have just come out there. Our daffodils are starting to come out. And I just when I see that coming, and then, you know, followed by those, magnolia trees will come out, or camellias. And, you know, it's just, and the kitchen garden is looking great. And, you know, stuff is in the ground, and we're going to see stuff coming out of the ground. And it just gives that great hope, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely can see it and feel it. The days are starting to get longer.
Yeah,
you know, that's it. You can start to see that now, you know. Well, Kevin, that has been a great chat. I really enjoyed it. You've taken me to India and Oregon and South Africa, and I'll be thinking about this now for the rest of the day. It's been really
I know,
lovely.
Yeah. So will I don't know whether it was a good idea or a bad idea. I was so in my zone of just being, I'm in Ireland, yeah. I'm going yeah. nowhere, and now you've just like reunited all these wonderful trips.
Absolutely, all these lovely memories, and giving people food for thought, for where that they will travel again, and hopefully if they saved money, that they will look forward to some adventure.
Yeah, but I think people, like not everybody, but a lot of people would have saved money over the last year and stuff like that, and maybe their next foreign trip could be even a better trip than they would normally get, because they might be able to afford to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think and hope so. And they probably will be able to afford to go to nicer properties within Ireland, castles and play, blue book houses and play places they might have thought were out of their reach before. But I think that that they'll realise, the value of going for something a little bit more special.
Yeah, I think what's nice about somewhere like Dunbrody House, which is part of Ireland's Blue Book, which are all individually owned by family-based families. There are indigenous Irish properties. And I think in this time, more than ever, we do need to support our own. We need to support the small businesses, because that is the backbone of what Ireland's all about.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks a million for the time, Kevin. That was pleasure. Great. I really enjoyed that.
Lovely
I really
to
enjoyed
well.
It. It's great to chat to you. Hopefully I'll see you on the road.
Yeah, please God.
Cheers and best of luck this summer. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, you
bye.
Too. Take care. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it was such a pleasure to chat with Kevin and learn all about his wonderful history of travel that goes way back in his family. I always say travel broadens the mind and feeds the soul, and there's so much to be learned in the process. And speaking to Kevin reminded me of a famous parable about the fisherman by Paulo Coelho. It's a short little story about a fisherman who literally has it all and a businessman who learns from him. It's definitely worth looking up. So on that fishy note, my next guest is steeped in fishing pedigree, and he spent some time at sea himself. Sean Doran of Howth has some interesting tales and advice about the fishing world, and how it too can find its way into the tourism industry. Well, I'm out here in my hometown of Howth by the sea, and it's a beautiful high tide. And I'm just here with Sean Dorn from Dorn's Seafood on the Pier, who's a long-standing fishing family in Howth, and they have a fabulous shop and the best fish and chips, I have to say, in Howth. Their fish is completely fresh, and I've lovely... he's got a new website with lots to offer people who can't get to the sea. If you want a flavour of the sea and you want to taste it, you can actually get it to your own home. Is that right, Sean?
That's correct, yeah. We just have launched a new website after COVID came in called Seafood2Go. That's the number two. Seafood2Go.ie, which we deliver, unfortunately at the moment, only to the greater Dublin area. But if we get busier and more successful, obviously we look at nationwide deliveries. So what you can do is you go on, click on, and hopefully in a few clicks you can fill a basket from the freshest of cod, salmon, famous Howth haddock, all the wonderful shellfish that Ireland has to offer, and we've also have a range of ready to cook meals. So when you get it to your house, all you have to do is pop it in the oven for 10 or 15 minutes, and then you can sit back and relax and enjoy the freshest fish that we have to offer in a great country surrounded by the sea. We've some great offerings, and
I can vouch for those, Sean, because I especially like your hake and leek dishes, and I pop down here myself when I want to treat myself on a Saturday night. It's very popular in our house, as well as your prawn korma and your teriyaki salmon. Even dad was adventurous enough to try that, and he loved it.
Yeah, one of my favourites too as well. And we have a wide variety for all tastes, spicy and savoury and sweet and whatever, and we've and obviously we'd help anyone in suggestions as well if they want to try it, be a bit different. And, apart from the traditional seafood, we have, a little bit more exotic, like the tuna and the sea bass and the fish that comes in mainly from abroad. And, you know, we have a large variety of frozen fish as well, so we can get it here, pop it in your freezer and take it out and try something different.
Will you deliver hampers to people outside Dublin? Or
we could deliver hampers, yeah. So the likes of fish, like the likes of smoked salmon, which is packed, and yeah, we've got Shine's tuna, having an amazing range of tuna and sardines, and that mostly all Irish sourced as well. And this is something
really good,
that we really want to push in Dorans as well, is Irish sourced seafood. Not easy to say. And because, you know, as an island nation, sometimes we don't appreciate what's literally, if I can use the phrase, on our doorstep. So we in Dorans especially, look at something, you know, all the products, you know, from the likes of Goldsbridge Trout Farm down in Kilkenny, which Mags and the crew have some fantastic products as well, to obviously smoked salmon like Daly's from Carsevine, and Shine's, as I mentioned, from Donegal, and many other companies around the
coast. You could really do a tour of the entire country fish wise, couldn't you?
I think after COVID, I think maybe, Michelle, we'll hook up and maybe we'll do the coast according to
I
us.
I like that, a hook up. And of course, because we go back a long way, Sean, you and I, we've got steeped in fishing tradition, our families are.
Absolutely.
And they go back here in Howth, and not many people would know that about me. My great grandfather was a fisherman, and yes, of course your family too. Like you came to Howth a long time ago.
Yeah, my mother and father came up in the 50s, and my father was probably one of the most successful fishermen in Ireland over the years, and at one stage we had a fleet of about 12 boats. All that's changed for different various reasons, but my two brothers are ex-skippers. I'm an ex-fisherman. I came ashore a little bit early, unfortunately, because my father passed away at a young age, so I came ashore to look after the shore side of things. But we, you know, I've worked.
And that makes a big difference then, to have actually fished. You know the fish so well.
Yeah.
To be able to bring it then to the plate for the consumer, I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think so. I would like to think that the input of being fishing and known exactly how fish are caught and what effort and resources go into catching fish I've brought to later life for the wholesale and retail, and now safely to go online.
What do you think the future is for fishing in Ireland, for the fishermen? What way is it going to go? I mean, it has been chipped away at gradually over the decades, hasn't it?
I suppose in one word, and we're all trying to look for positives in this day and age with the COVID situation, but it's a bit bleak. Between our relative weakness in Europe and not being able to fight our own corner properly, but Brexit hasn't helped, and then with, you know, I don't want to get too political, but the years of inaction by the government, successive government of all hues and colours, they just don't see the sea as a resource, which makes me pull my hair out on a daily basis.
Absolutely. When you look at the Norwegians, how they have built such an incredible economy for themselves, being the second largest fish producers in the world. You know, our sea is our richest resource, and we have kind of just let it go. I think, is it even 4% of our own waters we're allowed fish now, Sean? Is it something
like that? 4% of the fish that's in our waters.
We
had 25% of the waters before Brexit. Now we'll have a much larger percentage, which I must go and find out, but it's probably approaching over 40%. And if you look at, as you say, Norway, Iceland, the Faroe Isles, Australia, New Zealand, the island nations who are the masters of their own destiny, have thriving fishing industries, thriving fishing communities, if you dig down into it. And the Norwegians and the New Zealanders put down rules, and by God, if you break those rules, you're in trouble. Here, what's going on the west coast of Ireland is just criminal every day by EU boats. Some of them Irish, I'm afraid to say, but generally, we have huge factory boats in there.
And did they just literally pull all the fish up from the seabed? And does it wreck the system?
It obviously would have some effect on, not so much on the seabed or but the ecology of the sea is changed. I mean, we have the big what they call pelagic boats, which are the boats that catch herring and mackerel and so on, and they would be guilty an awful lot of what they call high grading, whereas if they catch small fish and it's not marketable, they just let them go in their hundreds of tons and their
and of course that's reckoning for the next generation.
Reckoning for the next generation.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but you're reminding me of a fantastic film I saw called Atlantic, which was made a few years ago, which really highlighted how Canada had stopped overfishing and kind of rebuilt their stock. So it is possible to do that here, do you think, Sean? And do you think COVID might have helped?
I'm very familiar with the Canadian situation. I spent a bit of time in Newfoundland, and where they literally shut down their fish. Very unpopular. The minister nearly got lynched, and I'm not talking metaphorically, by the fishermen at the time. But ultimately, although it was a hard decision, it was the right decision. We don't have anybody, certainly in Ireland, and I don't think even in Europe, that would understand or be brave enough to do that. And they're just going to chip away until fishery is exhausted. However, COVID sort of has helped a little, but we still have to see where the cards fall.
And I mean, there is great potential for. I actually don't know how to fish, and I've been dying to try fishing myself. And you know that's actually a lovely activity that could be brought in on our coasts, isn't it? You know, for tourist fishing.
Oh, tourist fishing could be huge as well. And again, I mean, for instance, like in the bluefin tuna situation, we're not even allowed to catch one bluefin tuna for recreation off the coast of Ireland. Yet we are allowed, the Japanese were on the west coast of Ireland. And if you look on the internet now, you can see the fleets of Japanese that came from the other side of the world to fish our fisheries. And we on the beach can't do it.
And now, who gave them the authority
They're out, able to fish in international waters 200 miles off. But other fleets like French and Spanish fleets do have quotas in Irish waters and are allowed to catch bluefin tuna in Irish waters. The same with sea bass. People say to me, why do I have to import sea bass from farms in Greece or even import wild sea bass from France? And I say, well, these wild sea bass were probably caught off the coast of Wexford or Cork by French boats and are brought back in by the boats to France and then re-exported to Ireland. So, like, I mean, if you want anomalies in the European theatre, just look at the fishing industry for 5 minutes and you'll go away scratching your head.
Absolutely. And you know, there is very little more palatable, more healthy, more delicious than a really good seafood meal. And, you know, we've got a plethora of fabulous restaurants here in Howth. At one end of the quay, you've got Aqua, and coming down, you've got, of course, the Ore House, hugely popular. You've got
Brass Monkey and Ivan's.
The Brass Monkey and Ivan's, and of course, the King Citric was one of the first and most famous fish restaurants in Ireland.
John Layden opened up there 50 years, I think, last year or year or two ago, and they've got some fantastic dishes over there as well. And they really were heroes to the Irish fishing industry to get it out to the general public.
Yeah, to make it popular, to get people really, because it was kind of nearly like a hardship to eat years ago when the fish was kind of forced down your neck on a Friday. Yeah, you know, we've got that Catholic kind of guilt and restrictions that we had on us then. But you know,
absolutely,
it really has become, I think, one of the most popular foods. And when I go into a nice restaurant, I'll always pick out the fish.
Yeah, well, I suppose we talked enough about the negative side of the industry, but the positive side is the people like around the coast, and you know, and we're lucky in Dublin that we have other alternative employment options. But if you look at the likes of Donegal and West Cork and Galway and the islands around, and you see what people are doing with seaweed products is another point. There's some fantastic seaweed products out there, sea salt that's been harvested from the sea, and the added value and the professionalism and the effort being put behind different things, like we say, shines and dailies and Carlingford oysters up in
and beauty products as well that come from seaweed and from
like Green and Marla have a fantastic range of the most natural products there. I'm not a user myself, I have to say, although I probably should do.
I could probably do.
and we've got these small little cottage industries, and not so small as well in some cases. But they're heroes of the industry, because they saw something that nobody else saw, and they've brought it, and I would suppose, if anything, plead with the Irish public and the people living in Ireland to look at these products and look at these producers.
For indigenous industries, exactly, that we need to, yeah, really,
and we don't need to
nurture,
run onto these websites and buying in stuff from the other side of the planet. We have it here, and if we had a little more management of our fisheries, we should have it here for generations to come.
Now, so Sean, I believe there is talk of some fishery tourism happening in Fingal and the area.
Yes, that's correct. Well, there's been always a few activities like the boats come to Ireland's Eye and angling boats for hire. But something I hooked upon, excuse the pun, a few years ago was when ordinary Dubliners and Irish people and tourists just randomly come down the harbour and they'd see me and probably identify that I'm a local and just start asking me general questions about boats and fishing and fishermen and nets and gear and what have you. And it was always enjoyable talking to people about your industry and what's close to your heart. So I said, maybe, you know, with the way things are changing and the relatively ease to get around the world, obviously all pre-COVID, was that people were interested in hearing about something different when they went abroad. And like I'm a fierce interest in history as well, and I always make sure that when I go, there's something that there's to draw my attention. So I said, well, let's take that and use it here in Holt. So I started up a concept called School of Fish. So obviously a play on words, but it would be that people can come who have little or no background in fisheries and mightn't think that they have any interest in it, but we found that anybody who's been brought along, and especially people who've been given the day out as a gift, find that they are intrigued by the industry.
And what sort of things would they be doing in it?
Well, first of all, we start with a very informal welcome and little introductions, and we try and make everybody feel very comfortable is the first thing, because it's a fun day. That's the main thing. It's a fun day, an educational fun day. And we do about half an hour in the classroom, when we're allowed to do this. And then we would explain the industry and the background of the industry, and the general, you know, things about Holt and the boats and what types of fish are caught off Holt in the Irish Sea. And then we go for a walk on the harbour, and basically then it turns out to be a two-way conversation where people ask the questions and we respond.
And do they get to go on a fishing boat?
If possible, the boats, if the tide is right and people want to, the skipper allows, yes, there is always that chance to do it. It doesn't happen every day, but yeah, people go aboard. Some people might only want to go and look in the wheelhouse and look at all the equipment, to get navigation and equipment and safety equipment and fish finding equipment. Some people want to go down the engine room and look at the fish handling qualities out of the boat, because we have to remember that, and this is a big part of the day, is that these boats are not just fishing boats, they're food factories, and that they need to get the food back to the shore in as best possible condition as they can to realise the best price for the market and to make sure that the fish merchants get good quality.
So do you envisage this is going to be something that maybe a family would do? A family could kind of come out for the day and experience what it's like to be a fisherman or to learn about the fishing industry?
Well, we've had a wide range of customers up to when we had to close. Like, we've had families, we've had corporate, we've had overseas visitors who've just found it on the internet. And I mean, I one particular memory of a guy who I could see coming into the school, into the classroom at the beginning of the evening. Just, I knew he didn't want to be there. And 2.5 hours later, I couldn't get rid of him. Because he had so many questions and found that there were so many things that he was interested in. And
I mean, there's so much to fishing. There's the whole meteorological aspect. There's the whole idea of the movements of the oceans, the currents, the technicalities. And what about a bit of rope tying? Would you learn how to tie a few ropes?
Well, that's the fun bit at the end of the evening, is we always give a few tasks to the people, and they're not compulsory, but we try and encourage them to learn, and we can and will teach you how to splice a rope or tie a few knots, maybe didn't know how to, or even mend the net, fishing net in the last 20 minutes. So
that's great. That's great. Well, you could even start a new industry or a new profession in the middle of it.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's great fun, and it sort of rounds it off. And normally when people leave, we there's more laughing than talking is usually had been.
Yes.
And you know, if people decide that they want to go into one of the restaurants, we do a package there so they can have an evening or an afternoon meal and a glass of wine if they choose, along with it, and we include that in the package. That can be included in the package, so it's easy, it's versatile. You can, you know, we can, one group might decide they want to go up to the sinker lift and find out why the boats go up in the lift and get all the work carried out and it's done, and other people might want to know more about lobster pots, other people about fish handling, about Brexit, plastics in the ocean, the rules of the EU, navigation, safety equipment. We have a sort of a prompt chart where we would go through about 20 different subjects during the day, but really it's led by the class or by the people who are there, who and what they want to talk about.
Sounds like a really great activity and something to look forward to and something to offer. You know, at the end of the dark line when people do come back to visiting Howth again.
I'll just say that every day that I've done it, and I've done it a good few times now, is I've really enjoyed it. And I would like to think that the people who come have enjoyed it as much as I have. And usually there's two of us, and sometimes we bring in a retired skipper, and he will regale the stories of the times that he was at sea and a few funny incidents, and a few not so funny. So we give a wide gambit to that as well.
That's a really great experience. I think people would travel now with sustainability and everything, it's all about experiential travel and learning as you experience travel. I think
absolutely,
that's going to be important.
And like, I suppose just to finish, we'd like to say that they go away with a little bit of the taste of their salt on their lips, but without going to sea, this is the next best thing that they will do before they actually step on a trawler and actually go out for 3 or 4 days. We would like to think that we would give them as close to that experience as possible.
Of what it's like to be a fishman.
I mean, people should look at seafood in a new light and sort of say, like, you know, what can we do, and and bringing on to the next generation of kids, and sort of, you know, and it's a fun thing to cook. It's easy. And
it's full of your natural vitamins and minerals that you can get to kind of the food better place.
If you come out the doors or go onto our website, we can get it to your door.
Yeah, that's great. So they just get on. Well, we nobody can travel more than 5K at the moment, but they can certainly go online to seafoodtogo.ie and they can buy it, and you'll deliver it within the pale.
Within
the M50 even.
We'll always look at. We'll always do our best for our clients, our customers. Because we want them to enjoy what we have a chance to enjoy every day, you know. So it's something that, you know, as I say again, you know, we have the resources in Ireland, and, you know, just look out for them as well. And if we don't supply them, I mean, you know, a lot of these smaller indigenous companies will supply directly. You know, are you? You know, so they'll have them in other shops or outlets as well. You know, so we'll be able to get them.
Well, listen, thanks very much for talking to me today, Sean. I'm going to pop in now and get something for my dinner. And it was absolutely great talking. It was a beautiful high tide out here in Howth. The sun isn't shining today, but it's lovely. And, you know, it's just lovely to be beside the sea. We're very lucky.
We are lucky. We're blessed. Yeah. We're blessed in every sense.
We are. So everybody can have a taste of it now too. Thanks very much, Sean.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you.
Well, I'm feeling hungry after all that talk this week, and I'll be recommending that if you buy from Seafood to Go and use my name, The Novel Traveller, when you're making your booking, Sean will give you 4 fish dinners for the price of 3. These usually retail at €18, so do check out his website, Seafood to Go. Next week, I'm chatting with the lovely Sally Ann Clark of the fabulous Le Crevan restaurant, and she has some big news coming up about a new venture involving herself and husband Derry Clark. So until next week, ciao for now, and I'll leave you with the strums of Pat Coldrick and Oreo Sunrise.